This week's Pseudopod is brought to you by Dreaming Mind Bindery, custom-made hand bookbinding. You can find journals, photo albums, notebooks, portfolios, boxes, and many other products. If you're looking for the right gift for an artist or a writer in your life, go no further than dreamingmind.com. And if you tell them Pseudopod sent you, you'll get a 10% off discount. Pseudopod number 6, October 6th, 2006. Today's story, What Dead People Are Supposed to Do, by Paul E. Martins. Good evening and welcome to Pseudopod, the horror podcast magazine. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty, co-editor of Pseudopod, along with Ben Phillips. We strive to bring you the best in horror audio. Like our sister podcast, Escape Pod, we are a paying market, supported by the donations of our listeners. You can visit our site to comment or donate at pseudopod.org. Our story this week is What Dead People Are Supposed to Do, by Paul E. Martins. Mr. Martins is the 1999 winner of the Writers of the Future Award and has had several short stories published, and is a friend of our sister podcast, Escape Pod, where you can hear some of his more whimsical stories that have no zombies at all. The story today is read by Ben Phillips. So pay that minimum payment before you sit down, because I've got a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
What Dead People Are Supposed to Do, by Paul E. Martins. When Iris left, she said it was because, quote, "There are too damn many dead people living in this house, and I don't want to be one of them." My dad sits in his recliner. He doesn't talk, or eat, or breathe. He watches TV. He comes home from work, and he watches TV. I don't know if he knows what's on, or if he cares. We sit in the dark, and the light from the TV screen flickers on his already greenish skin, reflected light and shadows lending his face the only animation it's capable of. It looks unnatural, which, of course, it is. But what is natural these days? Talking monkeys, dogs that go shopping, designer diseases, crops that pick themselves, gene jockeys and biomechanics have tinkered with so many things that I've lost track. Maybe it's a good thing that there are still laws about what they can and can't do to people. People that aren't dead yet, at least. Iris said it was wrong of me to have Dad brought back from the dead to work off his debts. But I didn't ask him to run up the balances on all those credit cards. I think a son should be entitled to inherit something from his parents. Am I wrong? He smells funny. There's a chemical medical smell, like that pickled frog they made you cut up in high school biology. And there's a hamburger going bad kind of smell. You know, like you've got some meat in your refrigerator and maybe it's okay, but maybe you'll get food poisoning, and whether or not you eat it depends on how hungry you are. Not that I ever think about eating Dad, that's just the way he smells. Actually, it doesn't make me want to eat much of anything. Iris said she used to pray that she would die by spontaneous human combustion because, quote, "That's about the only thing spontaneous that could ever happen in this morgue." I guess we are in kind of a rut. Night after night after night, we watch TV. Well, Dad's a zombie. Zombies don't roller skate or play the tuba or go kayaking. They sit and stare. Iris was always after me to go out, but I can't just leave him here all alone. Maybe he wouldn't notice, but after all, I am the one responsible for bringing him back. Sure, I could blame the credit card companies. After all, they practically rule the world these days. How could they not? They get all of everyone's money. With all the politicians they own, it was no problem for them to be allowed to add a clause to their agreements giving them the right to make people pay after they're dead. But I could have paid them all off if I'd sold Dad's house and his stocks and stuff, so even though Dad's beyond caring if I'm here or not, I guess I do feel kind of guilty. Every morning, I get up, go downstairs, get Dad out of his chair, and make him shuffle his way to the bathroom. It was a pain in the ass getting him to lift his legs over the rim of the bathtub, so I built a ramp. Zombie speed isn't quite enough to get him up and over, and I have to give him a little push. His skin is cold and spongy. I can't help but think of that biology class frog again. I strip him down, hose him off, dry him, and put some clean clothes on him. Then I shove him out the front door. He merges with the other undead in their stiff, shambling commute down the sidewalk to their offices, directed by the computer chips in their heads. I'm amazed by how many there are. Hundreds of them, maybe thousands. All people, or zombies that used to be people, on their way to work to pay off the bills they accumulated before they died. I watch them for a while, then I get ready myself and drive to the same place. I don't know how it happened. I was an okay student. I had a 2.8 in college. But what do you do with a history major? I went to work for a bank. 15 years later, I'm a zombie wrangler, riding herd on 100 undead bill collectors. Kind of funny, actually, having people who were brought back from their grave because they didn't pay their bills calling people who aren't paying their bills. They're really good at it, in an emotionless, monotone kind of way. They don't argue, they don't threaten, they don't get upset. They just make the calls, tell people, pay bill now, and hang up. They don't care if somebody's car needs new brakes, or if somebody's daughter needs a new kidney, or if somebody got fired. They never mention it, but just being called by a zombie makes people aware of what could happen to them if they croak with a large balance due on their accounts. I'm just here to make sure everybody has enough to do, and in rare cases, take over when someone demands to speak to a live human. What the hell? It's a living. Dad works on another floor as a telemarketer. He talks in that flat zombie way, no inflection, no emotion. But it's not how he says it, it's what he says. Credit cards sound like free money to some people. They gobble them up. It doesn't matter to Dad. He makes his calls all day and leaves at 6 o'clock with the other zombies on his shift. They stagger outside and the chips in their heads send them home. Dad gets home, sits in his chair, and watches TV. I get a beer and sit on the couch and watch with him. And the next day, we do it again. Then one day, I come home to find Dad's credit card statement in the mail. Hey, Dad, I say to him. Looks like you're going to be all paid up by the end of the month. Dad watches TV. I watch him watch TV. Has it been 2 years already? It occurs to me that I'm going to miss him. Even more than I miss the soft purple armchair that Iris threw out because she thought it had gotten too ratty. I mean, he is more than just furniture, after all. Not much more, but still. He's my dad. Granted, we weren't all that close while he was alive, but dead, he kind of grew on me. Hi, Iris, it's me. She's the only person I know to call. What do you want, Brad? I'm going to be late for my kickboxing class. If you're just going to bother me again about coming back, you can... No, nothing like that. I mean, I'd love it if you came home, but that's not why I called. For part of a second, I fantasize about having her sitting here on the couch with me, then hurry on. It's my dad. He's just about done paying his bills, and then they'll take him away and turn him off and shove him into the ground, and he'll be gone. I'll be all alone, Iris. I don't want to be alone. My voice gets very small, and I have that feeling at the sides of my nose that says I'm in danger of crying. I hear her sigh. There is the same mixture of exasperation, affection, and disgust that was in her sighs when she was still living with me. He's dead, Brad, she says, not unkindly. He's supposed to be in the ground. He's supposed to be gone. It's time that one of you started to do a little living. I don't say anything. She's right. I should have seen it myself. Thanks, Iris, I say. I knew you would know what to do. I'm actually kind of inspired. I'm going to make sure the next few weeks are the most exciting weeks my dad's ever had. Brad, that's not, she starts to say, but I hang up. I have a lot to do. I turn off the TV. Come on, Dad, I say as I grab his hand and pull him to his feet. Let's go bowling. He comes docilely, as he does everything else, when he does anything at all. I cram him into the car and drive to the bowling alley. This'll be fun, like something we should have done when I was a kid. I find an oldie station on the radio and crank it up. When I was a teenager, Dad used to yell at me to turn it down and keep my mind on driving. Now he just looks out the front window and doesn't say a word. It turns out that bowling with the dead is not as much fun as you might think. He doesn't help me get his shoes on, and he can't seem to grasp the concept of gripping the ball. He keeps dropping it so it thuds to the floor and makes dents. His approach stinks, and he has no follow-through. I move him up to the line a few times and stand behind him, helping him hold the ball, swinging his arm and lofting the ball toward the pins. It's no good, though. He throws mostly gutter balls, except for one time when he knocks down 2 pins. I get excited and slap him on the back. He totters a little, but his vacant stare tells me he's not impressed. Sorry, Dad, I say. Let's try something else. There's a strip joint next door. Hey, I think, how's that for a bonding experience for a guy and his dad? Alcohol and naked women. That's no good either. And I'm pretty sure at least one of the dancers is a zombie, too. They all seem like someone programmed their moves. They look like they should be sexy, but they're just lumps of flesh. If they have minds, they're somewhere else. Their body's on automatic pilot. Dad stares at them the same way he stares at the TV. And it would take a lot more beer than I'm able to drink for me to get turned on by these women, either. The music is too loud, the drink's too expensive, the dancer's too numb. We go home. Bowling and strippers? That's your idea of excitement? Iris isn't impressed when I call her the next day. Jesus, Brad, you're pathetic. She's right. You're right, I say. But I don't ask her what I should do instead. My dad, my problem. I'm gonna do better, Iris. My dad is gonna have the best 2 weeks of his life if it kills me. I hang up, determined that dad is gonna do more than just watch TV. Iris will be proud. A movie? No, that's just watching TV on a bigger screen. Go-karts! Thrills and spills. The wind against your face as you pit your nerve and skills against those of your competitors. Iris would like that sort of thing. We get to the track and I pay for dad. There are three high school boys already waiting to go. They've got those tattoos that keep moving all the time, which make me seasick. One of them has fang implants. And there's a father and his 12-year-old son joking with each other about who's gonna kick whose ass. I push a helmet onto dad's head and get him squished in behind the wheel. His knees stick up. I put his hands on the wheel. 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock. Okay, dad, I say. Have fun! I run off the track just before the guy waves a flag to start the race. Tires squeal, the air is filled with dark gray smoke and the roar of engines that sound more powerful than they really are. But dad just sits there, staring. He looks kind of stupid just sitting there, if you want to know the truth. I guess there's a reason why you don't see a lot of zombies driving. The teenagers whoop it up and try to see how close they can come to dad as they pass him. After the race, when I go to get dad, the go-kart guy tells me, "Get that stiff out of here and don't come back." But the father stops and says, "My mom was a zombie. I think it's nice what you're doing." As he's walking away with his kid, though, I hear him say, "Stupid, but nice," and they both laugh. There's a batting cage and miniature golf at the place, too, but what's the point? We go home and watch TV. Maybe that's what dead people are supposed to do. But Iris said it was time he started living. At least I think that's what she said. And Iris is almost always right. Iris could never be a zombie. For one thing, she doesn't believe in credit cards, so she'll never have to worry about paying her bills from the grave. But for another, she's got too much life in her. Even if she were dead, she'd be more alive than most living people. She runs. She dances. She kickboxes. She climbs mountains. She goes scuba diving. She does volunteer work. She's got those body sculpting bacteria that know where they should eat your body fat and where they should leave it alone. She makes me exhausted. I love her, but I can't keep up with her. I think she loves me, or she did love me, but she needs to have more fun than she can have with me. I guess we used to have fun, but geez, a guy grows up, you know? I'm tired when I get home from work. Don't I have a right to just relax? Is it a crime to have a couple of shows I like to watch on TV? A week goes by. Dad and I go to work, come home, and sit and watch TV. Only a few more days and they'll stop sending signals to the chip in Dad's head and he won't be undead. He'll just be dead. I've got to figure out something. One last shot at living before he's gone forever. Something for him to remember for eternity. A tall order. And the pressure is getting to me. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? Then, something on TV gives me the answer. Skydiving. Oh yeah, I think. A death-defying act right before death. Falling, flying, free. And then, another idea comes to me. How I can make it even better, more intense. I'm a genius. I tell Dad, but he doesn't say anything. Iris! I know I'm practically shouting, but I can't help it. I got it! I know what I'm gonna do! I picture her being proud of me, looking at me with one of those my hero kind of looks. I'm gonna have Dad jump out of an airplane! The only sound coming from her end of the phone is one of her sighs. Then she says, Brad, you're going about this all wrong. Don't you get it? Your dad isn't the one you have to worry about. He's a zombie, Brad. He's done all the living he's going to. You're the one who needs to wake up. You're the one who has to realize you're not a zombie, too. This is all old stuff, the kind of thing she used to say when we still lived together. But I know I'm not a zombie. Would a zombie come up with an idea like mine? Would a zombie even try? I have to make a few calls. I get a hold of the skydiving people. They take a little convincing, a little cash, but eventually they go along with my idea. I call Myra, the brown-haired woman in charge of zombie accounts at the bank where I work. She's short and soft, sort of cute. The timing is important. She can't turn Dad off too soon or too late. She agrees to let me call her from the airplane. She'll have her finger on the switch and throw it when I give the word. She kind of likes my idea. She doesn't really enjoy being the one who has to take the un out of the undead. She says maybe we should have lunch sometime after it's all over. I say maybe we should. Dad finishes his last day at work. His co-workers don't throw him a going-away party. They probably won't notice he's gone. He comes home and sits in his chair, waiting for me to turn on the TV. "No TV tonight, Dad," I say. I wonder if he realizes that he won't ever watch TV again, that he won't ever do anything again. My eyes fill up with tears. He's become my best friend, and I'm going to miss him a lot. Who will I watch TV with? I take his hand and pull him up out of his chair. "I've got something special for you tonight." Neither of us say anything on the way to the little grass runway that is the skydiving airport. Once or twice, I swipe my sleeve across my eyes so I can see. At the airport, I have to fill out all kinds of releases and waivers that say if anything goes wrong, even if it's their fault, I won't blame them. Dad and I watch as the instructor instructs us. This is how you get in the plane. This is how to get out of the plane. This is what to do when you're falling toward the ground at 120 miles an hour. I doubt Dad is taking it in much, but he doesn't really have to. When it's time to go, I call Myra, so she'll be ready. "I can't believe you're doing this," she tells me. Her voice has the "my hero" tone I wanted from Iris. I call Iris. "Brad, you're insane. Zombies don't skydive." I strain to hear a hint of admiration in her voice. "But if you're really going to jump out of a plane too, maybe there's hope for you after all." She pauses a second. "Maybe we can go hang gliding next weekend." I wonder if she's crazy. We get in the plane and go up about 2 miles. The sky is blue and cloudless. I bet we can see for 100 miles. The instructor straps himself to me. We're doing what they call a tandem jump. He does all the work. I'm just along for the ride. He opens the door, and suddenly there's nothing between me and the ground except Dad, who is sitting and watching. I call Myra again. "All set," I say. I don't hang up. I've got to keep the line open. Timing is everything. I look at Dad and lean over to give him a hug, taking the instructor with me. "Bye, Dad," I say. "I love you." Did I ever tell him that before? Then I push him out of the plane. I'm not sure, but I think he gives me a look right before he disappears. Not a, "Thanks, this'll be fun," look. More of a, "Are you crazy? What the hell are you doing to me?" look. I'm pretty sure he says, "Oh shit," as he starts falling. I'm surprised. The skydiving guy and I rock forward, then back, then forward again, and we're out of the plane too. I remember to arch my back, chin up, arms out. I look down, and there's Dad, arms flailing, legs kicking, like he's trying to claw his way back up into the sky. He seems to be screaming. The instructor taps me, and I pull the ripcord. We bounce up, then start drifting slowly down toward the airfield. I look again, and Dad's getting close to the ground. "Myra," I say into the phone. "I'm here, Brad." "Okay, ready?" I wait another second. "Now!" Dad stops thrashing. He hits the ground. It looks like it would have hurt a lot if he'd still been alive. It might have even hurt if he'd still been undead. But Myra turned him off in time. "Dad," slips out of me, kind of like a sob. I hang limply in the parachute harness, ignoring the instructor as he yells at me to pull my legs up. We hit the ground, me first. "You goddamn idiot," says the instructor. I don't know what he's complaining about. I'm the one with the broken legs. I'm the one with the dead, squashed father. I still have the phone, and I can hear Myra. "Brad, are you all right? Brad?" "Hi, Myra. I'm okay. Except I don't think I'll be able to go to lunch for a while." I tell her about my legs. If this is living, Iris can have it. I don't think Dad cared for it much either. I don't think I'll be doing much besides lying around and watching TV. "That's okay. I like watching TV. Maybe we can watch together." If I wasn't in so much pain, I'd smile.
Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 2.5 license. This means you can scare as many friends as you like with it, just don't change it and don't sell it. Our music is by permissions of Anders Manga at AndersManga.com. Next week, we bring you a story by Jenny Lee Simner about a malevolent heavenly body. Till then, remember to keep your nose clean, pay more than the minimum payment, and call your parents once in a while, if only to make sure they're doing the same things.